All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Thursday, June 15th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
And we're going to be discussing a full Thursday, two smaller slates in MLB today for Thursday, starting with a three-game early slate starting around the noon hour, and then 7 o'clock games going off in the evening. We're from DFSR.com, DFSR.com/MLB. We'll get you a free three-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's going to be optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. And there's your phone. That's okay. We're going to just power through it. You're a popular guy.
You're
a popular guy, buddy. You know, that's people calling up to say only a whole host of things they could be calling to tell you at this early hour.
Thank you so much for the great projections from your projection system that I found when I went to dfsr.com/MLB. I just wanted to let you guys know that it's changed my life and been a great time. So thanks a lot. I got this number off my credit card statement, and I'm just hoping to let you know that I appreciate you. So that's like a sample of the type of voicemail I probably just got.
That is all. All right, let's talk. We'll talk briefly about this early slate, just because it has
One major.
Well, that's actually a great call. It exists, and that is the only reason really to talk about it. I mean, your impression when you look at this slate, mine was the pitching here is so dreadful. I know it's only three games, so you know with only three games, you are going to run into situations where there just isn't a pitcher to roster. This one is particularly bad, just because every team has an implied run line of 4.6 or higher, and really most of them are just around 5 or higher. Is this even worth it to play with the pitching situation on the early slate?
I don't think so. A long story short there. I mean, and if you do, just understand that you're embracing a huge amount of variance here. The most expensive pitcher on the slate, at least on FanDuel, is Jose Berrios. Berrios this season actually does have kind of reasonable peripherals, and he was a real prospect coming out of the minors, so I suspect he'll see pretty high ownership here. 9 Ks per 9, 3 walks per 9, not terrible by any stretch. But, you know, just he's not really the type of pitcher you want to pay $9,500 for on a normal slate. The issue is that if you don't go with him, you're getting someone who's just actively bad, maybe losing games on purpose, like Dave Holmberg or Chris Tillman or even Rich Hill with his 6 walks per 9. There's really just no place to land if you want any kind of pitching safety. Josh Tomlin, people had concerns about Kluber facing LA. I can tell you that Josh Tomlin up against that lineup full of lefties is not going to go much better. So, and Kluber, of course, great last night, just a quick aside. But it's a grisly slate. The good news is you can play all the bats you want. So every game has an implied total of 10 or higher. So yeah, go crazy, folks. Go play.
Almost no matter which way you slice it, at least on DraftKings, you're just rostering two pitchers and then almost all the most expensive
just
guys at every position.
Top guy on each position, yeah, exactly.
And that's just one of those things where, I mean, everyone's going to pretty much have the same bats ownership, I suspect, just because to not do so would probably be leaving money on the table. And that's, I mean, usually just not correct anyway, at least for cash games. But, I mean, for tournaments, this is a situation where you probably can just actively leave money on the table, maybe a lot if you stack a team. If you stack a team, you're almost just going to, because there's just not enough salary consideration to fill it out. So I think if you want to play some tournaments here on the three-game slate, I think you can really probably just be prepared to leave some money on the table if you stack. And just it doesn't look good when, you know, you're 3,000 underneath the cap, but that's probably the strategy here.
You really
can't do anything else. And like I said, when these implied run totals, you know, 5.1, 4.8, 4.9, 5.5, 5.1, you know, these are ridiculous for just considering how few games there are. So anyway, I think you put it well. Tread lightly. I don't think I play just about every set I can for MLB, and I think I'm probably going to sit this one out if that tells anybody anything. Or if
that tells me something, Doug, because you've got a real problem when it comes to DFS. It doesn't matter if you're working, if you're not, early slate, late slate, middle slate, express slate, mix up slate, FanDuel frenzy slate, doesn't matter. Doug is in there. This one, he's out, folks. So
that part is not true, but there will be times where we're on like a Skype call with somebody and my eyes will glaze over because I'm just off doing something else, and it's usually just putting in a lineup. So let's talk about the 7 p.m. though, where we do have a clear-cut pitching option at least. And we've said before on the podcast, and I suspect this is the case for most people, sort of if you play a majority of cash games, at least like I do, where you want one sort of steady hand pitcher that you can rest your cap on. Sale is clear of that here in the evening, right?
Of course, yeah. I mean, the 12.5 Ks per nine, 1.6 walks per nine, truly elite level stuff. Really almost on Kershaw's level for this year, actually above Kershaw's level for this year. But even as we try to project outward, we have him as almost the same pitcher. You know, the thing you get with Sale that you really don't get with a lot of pitchers is just the inning stability and the elite K rate. You don't often see both of those because oftentimes people who strike out a lot of guys can't go deep into games because they're spending so many pitches just making people swing and miss instead of letting them put balls into play. Then you throw in a really excellent matchup here with Philly at Philly. It's just, you know, which means he gets to face a pitcher as well. It's just a dream scenario, and he's really not that expensive. You know, 11.5 on FanDuel means he's probably going to be in every lineup guy for us for cash games and probably for our competitors as well.
Oh, yeah, 90%. I would say 85 to 90% start in cash games here. I don't think I'd be shocked if it was lower than that, considering the rest of the names on the list, just because he's so head and shoulders above the rest. And like you said, the price is just not – it's a dumb price. 11.5 for him here is just
– it seems arbitrary. Like, we've paid 12.4 for him in the last week or two. Like, what's bad about this matchup? I think it's the game at Coors.
I think it's the Coors game that's like that has the pitching prices just down a little bit. I think
so. You still think that influences that? So you can get Coors games in? Is that the idea there?
I'm not sure, but I do suspect there's something to the idea of when those bats are just artificially inflated, it pushes other things down a little bit. I could be wrong. I probably am wrong, but like I can't find another reason that he would not be a $12,000 pitcher on this slate. Like, at least like he's, it's not like he's been bad in the short term, or right. It's not like, you know, he's sort of running bad in certain spots. Like, you'll see, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example. I can't really think of one off the top of my head, but even like, let's say Kluber last night, like his price was down a little bit. The matchup versus the Dodgers isn't so great, right? Like, you can find some reasons why the numbers would be down. Sale has just like been the best pitcher in the majors this year. You said his numbers are as good, if not better, than Kershaw, who's a 12.5 pitcher. I just don't understand where the 11.5 price tag comes from. And I if I'm grasping at straws here, the one thing I can think of, at least in this spot, is that Coors game. Now, I mean, you go over to DraftKings, it's a different story. It's 14-1. Like, there's no problem. No problem there. They figure that one out pretty easily. They're like, what is the number that we can price him at where you're at least starting to think about it? On Sale, you're not thinking about it at all, right? You lock him in there, and then you just kind of work out the rest of your bats, and it's actually going to be easy. And you'll be able to fit in some Coors bats, so which we'll get to in a little bit. But 14-1 on DraftKings, how close to that is it pushing for you to play him or not in cash games here?
I mean, I'm still going to play him in cash games. I think we have some reasonable second tier options that we can pair with him to still get some pretty good bats. You know, even our top lineup right now has Sale in it, and it has three Coors bats as well. So it's like, you know, you can really have your cake and eat it too on DraftKings. The DraftKings lineups actually look really promising to me. I like the FanDuel ones as well, but the fact that I can get Sale and three Coors bats and, you know, mix in some guys that are going to bat higher in their lineups than usual, get some good opportunity there, maybe sprinkle in some value guys like Cabrera. Like, there's just a lot to like about this slate. I mean, it's just a good spot all around.
And I think that's going to be the case in FanDuel too. We're just working with some just kind of set lineups here, some projected lineups rather than the real ones. And as we know, every once in a while, or often, you will just get the guy like the Malik Smiths of the world. Oh, and he's in the lineup anyway. But, you know, like Hyunsu Kim, who randomly hits leadoff for the Orioles last night. You know, Brian Goodwin, when he moves up for the Nats. These guys like this just kind of crop up. Not every single slate, but often enough that the other more expensive guys like the Arenados that are going to be hitting in Coors today are going to creep up to the top of lineups too. So I suspect we see that as well. 14-1 would be harder to navigate if they had pushed up the prices for all the other pitchers, except they didn't. There's no other after Sale, there's no other pitcher over 10,000. So then you're like, oh yeah, 14-1, but I can do it because I just get salary relief on all these other guys. Not like these other guys are like any great shakes at all, and we're going to go through some of the other names, but the 14,000 thing is easier to stomach just because you're not forced to overpay for anybody else, so it sort of evens out. If we are kind of pairing him with a starting pitcher two type, is there someone in this list of, I would say, slightly better than average to grossly mediocre to worse pitchers that you can pair with Sale today?
Well, you know, it is going to be a kind of a tricky situation figuring out exactly who goes with Sale, because a lot of the names we're considering today have a lot of the same issues. So I guess I'll start with the guy who's currently showing up there, and that's Justin Verlander. Verlander this season has been stone cold terrible. You know, the ground ball rate is as low as it's ever been, and it's already been trending sort of in the wrong direction. But this year, he's turning a lot of those into home runs, a lot of those fly balls into home runs. The BABIP has risen back to historical levels after last year kind of getting away with murder with the 255 BABIP, and everything else has followed. You know, the XFIP is higher, and the ERA is higher as well. He's also shaved off 2 Ks per nine and added 2 walks per nine, and those are not numbers you want to see either. So these are a lot of bad things that I just said about Justin Verlander, so why are we potentially recommending him? It just comes down to the price. You know, the $7,600 is probably still too cheap, and if you think... So you don't, we can probably throw out him repeating last season's, you know, random deal with the devil kind of season that he had, but if we think he's still in the middle of last season of this year, which I think is a fairly reasonable expectation, that it all hasn't gone to pot completely, then I think $7,600 is probably just a little too cheap. And given that, I mean, you can throw out some names after this. The other names that we're comparing him against don't really have a great track record this season either. So taking all those factors together, and, you know, I might just wind up being a buyer on Verlander here.
Yeah, he's got some... Well, you start to wonder, like, what exactly is going on with him, right? So the velocity is not an issue. His velocity is actually up from last year. So I don't know if that's, like, an overthrowing thing. It's hard to imagine someone like Verlander is doing that this late in his career. So I'm kind of, like, not really willing... I just don't think that's the case. So then you kind of look at, like, has he changed his approach? No. It could just be a movement issue. And that actually, if that's the problem, then that might not be something that he's going to solve anytime soon, because all of his pitches that were once insanely plus, especially the slider, well, the slider was really plus last year, all of his pitch values are just negatives now. Now, I get, is chicken or the egg? Are they like, are they pitch values because he's been so bad, or has he been so bad because they're negative pitches? It's a little hard to tell right now. But you're right. He's just been not good. And the line opened with him. The line has gone away from him from open. So open at -140 at a 9 over under. It's now down to -130 at 9.5. So most of that's coming in on the Rays side of the ball. The Rays do strike out a lot, but Vegas, I mean, at least early money kind of ran to the table here pretty quickly and said, this is an old Verlander line. No one's really looked at the new Verlander, because it's time to just kind of jam some money in on the Rays. That is also not a good sign for him, because typically that very, very early money that will shift the line so dramatically is pretty smart. Like, it's the early money and the late money that
generally the baseball betting donkeys don't wake up at 7 a.m. Vegas time to rush over and jam all their money in, right?
Like, oh, well, this one's 8 p.m. night before.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, they're not just sitting in the sports book waiting for the line to come out so they can place
their jogging bet out of their hotel room with their flip-flops, just gently jogging down to the sports book to make sure that this thing didn't change in time. So that's a disturbing line movement for him going in. So I get why the system likes him now. It's pulling a little bit off of where his general age progression would bring him to now, not like just a total cliff dive that he seems to have taken this season. So will be something that we look into over the course of the day. It's not going to feel great. I can see people playing him because Verlander is just a name and he is still a favorite, and the Rays do strike out a lot. All that being said, it doesn't feel great. After him, is there anybody else? I have a couple names here, but I wonder if we're on the same page here. Like, did you have anyone else that jumped out to you?
I think we're probably going to have some similar names here. I think another guy people will consider at least is Michael Wacha. Wacha's interesting because he's actually been better than Verlander this season, but he doesn't have the same historical track record. So at least as far as our forward-facing projections go, we have him as, you know, just kind of a worse pitcher in a vacuum than Verlander is. But I'm wondering, do you feel like that's correct, or do you think that might be us not accounting enough for this season's performance?
I mean, his this season performance isn't completely out of bounds from what he's done in the past. Like,
he's comparing Wacha to Verlander. Like, do you think we're not emphasizing this season enough when you figure that Wacha has just been better than Verlander this season, right?
I think that we probably have not fully recognized that there's a chance that Verlander is just maybe toast. Like, and that, if that's the case,
because Wacha's cheaper than Verlander, he's $1,300 cheaper and has had better peripherals.
And the same kind of case I made against Verlander has it going for Wacha here. So his line movement goes the opposite direction. His opens at 9, -140, exact same place as Verlander's, right? His actually moves up to -150 with the runs coming down off the Milwaukee side. So, like, if Vegas set both of their lines at almost the exact same place, and they're both moved in the exact opposite directions. In that sense, I would say I tend to trust Waka more in this case, just because for the same reason I distrust the Verlander part. Now I know that they're not coming in at the same baseline, but it is interesting that their numbers are somewhat similar this season. With the xFIP aside, where Verlander's clearly worse, like the peripherals aren't so different than each other, except that and they both are facing teams with high strikeout rates, the Brewers and the Rays, and yet, you know, a lot of smart money went for Waka and against Verlander. I think in that case, if that trend were to continue, or if it was just to kind of stay as it was right now, I would trust Waka and just say that he just has a better chance of continuing on his career arc, whereas Verlander is probably just on the wrong side headed down.
Yeah, I think that's it. And it'll be interesting to see where the system lands, because if that line continues to move in opposite directions, right now we actually have Waka as the better points per dollar play, but Verlander just kind of outstrips him in terms of overall points, and the system is not thinking you really need the extra savings on Waka. But yeah, I could see that, you know, little things that can change, like lineups coming out, line movement and so on, could change it. Interesting on Waka, actually, and this is another one that's always pretty tough to figure out. So for the first 300 innings of Waka's major league career, he had a BABIP around 285. So that's, you know, better than league average, I guess you would say. In the last 198 innings, in the last two seasons, his BABIP has been 325. So it's just very hard to figure out. Oftentimes BABIPs tend to normalize around 300. His career BABIP now is 297. And this season, it's still at 319. So it's kind of this weird situation where, you know, batting average on balls in play, allowed in this case, it's one of those things that people like to pretend it's the same for everybody, but it's actually not. But it's oftentimes very hard to figure out what the true BABIP allowed for a given pitcher will be, because, you know, a lot of different factors can weigh into it. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm rambling on and on here, but I think that Waka, he might just be a better pitcher, but you might feel worse having him in there, because I think Verlander might be higher owned.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably where we will end up. It's also going to kind of depend on some of these bats, especially probably in the Coors game, where that line ends up, how much we want to kind of reap the savings on Waka. This will be the closest decision, I think, going into the evening slate. Okay, so we covered Waka, Sale, Verlander, not in that order, obviously. The only other guys to maybe kind of nod to here, I mean, Gio Gonzalez, any interest with him against the Mets? Sonny Gray against the Yankees? I don't know. Any of these guys kind of stand out to you at all as worth a flyer?
Yeah, not especially. I mean, Gio, I guess you could make an argument that he has a pretty good matchup here. The Mets have been considerably better against right-handed pitching this season, and they've struggled quite a bit against lefties. And I'm still not sure that matters. Like, Gio has all the same problems that Verlander has, but it's been this ongoing trend of him getting worse year after year. And so, and you know, with him, the control has always sort of been an issue, and he was always kind of, for me anyway, looking like a balloon waiting to pop. And this season, the 4.26 walk rate, it just strikes me as pretty troublesome. He's also not as young as maybe he seems in some ways. Like, at least in my mind, he's not a 32-year-old pitcher, but he is. And, you know, pitchers can fall off a cliff decidedly before that. So the ERA has been pretty good. I think some people will take a chance on him tonight, especially if they look at some of the other names and find them to be pretty risky. But it strikes me as the exact opposite of what I want to do, which is, you know, if I think Gio, Verlander, and Waka are all pretty similar, I would not want to pay $9,000 for the guy who, in my mind, is like at least as good, if not worse, than the other options.
Yeah, no, and I could see maybe taking a chance on Jordan Montgomery here. He's coming off a pretty good start against Baltimore, 8 Ks in 7 innings. He is a prospect that they've been sort of, they haven't really been stretching out, but early in the season, he was kind of, he went 4 2/3 in his first game. He's been kind of just going 6 innings. He will get blown up at times, and he does struggle with control, and that can be kind of the death of him. If the walks get out of control for him, then that's going to be the end of him. Right. I do think there's upside for him at his price, considering he's a favorite, only 8,600. I mean, 8,600 is a lot, but not that much when there's really no one else over 10,000 here on the slate. So I could see him as an upside play and really nothing more. He is a slight favorite here in Oakland, and their implied run line is low enough that I think you can take a stab at him.
Yeah, I'm with you, Doug. And before we move on to the hitter stacks for tonight's slate, I want to talk about InGame Fantasy, because InGame is our newest sponsor, and they're offering a super generous promotion right now where they're offering a 3-day contest on their site where anyone who outscores the DFSR staff members who are playing in the contest gets a free $5 entry into InGame contests in the future. So I know a bunch of our users have already jumped on this promotion. It'll still be available for anyone who wants to hop in tonight as well. So what's in-game fantasy? Well, it's a totally different kind of daily fantasy sports experience that I know a lot of our users are having a great time with. I saw a lot of people talking about it in chat last night. Basically, what it allows you to do is have that same thrill of drafting your DFS lineup from night to night, but it adds an additional layer of kind of control that's really interesting and actually unique. You know, a lot of people talk about sort of unique things being added to the daily fantasy sports space. I can safely say that in-game is one of them. So what it allows you to do is you pick a player, and instead of just getting a certain number of points based on what they do, that player actually plays as though he's on a baseball team that you manage. So if Mookie Betts goes out there and hits a home run, Doug, you get the full home run. But if he hits a double, then he's just on second base. And then you select another player who's going to come up, and whatever he does impacts the baseball game in the same exact way. So you get, I think this contest is actually a 6-inning contest. Normal in-game contests are 3 innings. But yeah, you select from the player pool of any player who's on deck at that time. So you can do this in real time. You don't set your lineup beforehand, which helps you mitigate injury risks, weather risks, and so on. And you just have the excitement of continuing to draft your team all night, basically. So yeah, in-game, really cool product. Jason's been in the chat helping people out too, so check him out. Hope to see you in the contests sometime soon. If you use promo code DFSR, you do get another $5 free entry ticket as well. So in-game fantasy, hope to see you in there.
Yeah, I led off with Mookie Betts last night, got him on first. Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah, you're such a joker, dude, because I know what you're doing there. Rizzo wasn't even in that great a spot. You were just sitting there trying to cut corners as usual. And then you get paid off for it as usual. So
I just put up a quick 3 in the first. So good luck catching me. Except actually one person in this thing has got like 16 runs. I don't know how this person did it. But
the good news is that doesn't matter for the other people listening. You don't need any more money or any more runs than that to beat us. If you have 16 runs, you've already beaten us. You get your $5. But
all right, let's
you're
talk some
to beat me or Doug. We're having a hard time so far. So
we'll talk some stacks for this evening. Obviously, the first place we need to start is Coors, as we mentioned with the pitchers here. We haven't been in Coors for a little while. We're back here with a run line for at least the Colorado side, climbing up and over 6 runs right now. We nodded to it a little bit. Are they just like the clear team that you want to try to get at least 3, maybe 4 bats in your lineups if possible going into tonight, just considering how high their run line is compared to the other teams in the league?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. It's a combination of 2 different factors for me. First of all, the Colorado bats aren't that expensive tonight for whatever reason. Like, you can get DJ LeMahieu for $3,400. That's very, very affordable. Cargo's $3,400 as well. So you can start to get some of these cheaper guys in there, and then maybe, who knows, maybe you save up and splurge on a little Arenado as well. I don't know. I don't know if that interests
you. Even Arenado at $4,600 is not totally out of bounds.
Arenado's showing up in our DraftKings lineups right now at $5,400. I think, and Story's $3,700 there. I think the prices are very, very reasonable for them tonight. I don't know exactly why, because Matt Moore, I think we were talking off the air before we got started today, and you called him sort of the exact guy who never wants to pitch in Coors.
Right.
Do you want to elaborate on that for a second?
Well, he's just a low strikeout, high fly ball pitcher, and that's death. Like, that is absolute death when you go to Coors. And because it's great for San Fran, AT&T Park, where the place is just absolutely cavernous, and those fly balls will just kind of get soaked up. But in Coors, the opposite happens, right? Like, those fly balls turn into home runs pretty damn quickly. And when you have LeMahieu and Arenado at the top of the lineup, those righty bats, I mean, even Blackman's not totally completely terrible. And then Mark Reynolds as well on the right-hand side of the plate. You can be in real, real trouble pretty quickly for Moore. And so, and like you said, the prices just don't really reflect what kind of matchup and how much better their matchup is than everybody else. I mean, like, even Ian Desmond, you might see $4,300 on DraftKings, completely reasonable. So 3 to 4 Colorado bats minimum, I would say, is probably the way to go tonight. It's going to be a pretty high variance approach because you need more to kind of live up or live down to expectation in the matchup. But you're not really bending over backwards to get these guys into lineups, and I think that's just
you're
a good
really
place
not.
To be.
There's almost no cost to it, frankly. Like, you're just basically picking between them and other hitters playing in normal baseball parks. And when you're in that kind of situation, it's a good one. You know, Moore's an interesting pitcher too, because he's obviously changed teams. And he's actually changed up his repertoire a lot, too. His fastball percentage is down to 51%, which means either that's an institutional message saying, like, hey, buddy, throw the fastball less, or just him losing confidence in it, neither of which is particularly inspiring to me, because, coming out of the minors, people might forget, but Matt Moore was, like, you know, in those conversations for top one or two prospects in all of the minor leagues when he was just cutting guys apart in the AAA for the Rays in the early teens here. But yeah, no, he hasn't lived up to that expectation at all. Not trusting the stuff doesn't help, and it's just really hard to imagine him getting out of this Coors game unscathed.
Now, I would say on the other side of the ball, I do think you don't need to overpay for the Giants in this spot. They are also expensive, but Jeff Hoffman has actually been amazing this season so far. Now, a lot of it was, or a big part of it was, his last start against the Cubs, where he was pretty much lights out. But on the season, he has four starts. His K percentage, he's striking out more than 11 batters per nine and really just not walking anybody. I get that it's Coors, but high strikeout guys are guys.
Holy cow, I didn't even notice this. He had done this this early this season because he wasn't really a huge prospect.
But. No, he's been amazing. And so I just don't think you need to. I mean, wait for the rest of the weekend on the Giants, I would say here. There's high strikeout guys in Coors. Look, they can get beat up, and he is a fly ball pitcher. So, like Matt Moore, he actually so far has kind of been an extreme fly ball guy, except that there's just not that many fly balls being hit against him because he's just striking everybody out. That could happen again. Look, you miss a couple in the zone, and they turn into fly balls, and he could be in trouble too. The strikeout rate is enough for me to just say, I'll wait and see on him and the Giants' bats. I don't think there's any reason to overpay. And Vegas is kind of mirroring that right now. Like their line has actually dropped to under five. It's kind of rare that you see an under five line for most pitchers, or five implied runs at least, for most pitchers in the majors. And Hoffman seems to have woken something up with somebody because his numbers have been just elite. There's no other way around it. It's a real small sample size, so take it for what it's worth. But you're with me here. There's no reason to jam the Giants' bats in here, right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
After those two teams, after the Rockies and maybe just fading on the Giants here, where else can we round out the rest of our lineups?
Yeah, I don't mind going back down the Red Sox well again. You know, we were on them last night. I think we had three or four Red Sox in our optimal lineups, depending on which site you played in. And, of course, they did work. You know, bets absolutely went off. Bogarts was serviceable as well. Tonight they go up against Nick Pivetta. Pivetta's kind of an interesting character because he's not, like a lot of times, so let me contrast him against someone else going tonight. So he's not like a Robert Gesellman, right? Like he's not a David Holmberg, like some random guy who comes up from the minors just to eat a few innings while someone's on the DL. Matt Strom for the Royals rings a bell here. He is a real pitcher. I think the Phillies do picture him as a part of their future. The difference with Pivetta for me is that he doesn't seem to have it quite figured out just yet. Like he looks like a little bit of a rush job, even though he's 24 years old. The control has not been there whatsoever. His minor league track record wasn't stellar. Like he was fine in AAA this season for sure. Maybe even good, you could say, but the 58 innings he's pitched in AAA are just not a long enough body of work that I can really trust it yet. So I'm going to trust more in the 29 major league innings because the competition's so much stiffer here. And he's really struggled with both keeping the ball on the ground and not giving up the long ball. So I think the Red Sox, very, very high upside, even though there's obviously an expense in paying for such a public team.
Yeah, I think that the public nature of the Red Sox is something I'm just still trying to wrap my head around. There are some teams like this that do get somewhat inflated lines. You know, I think the Cubs fall into this category as well, just because they're the Cubs, they're the Yankees, they're the Red Sox, and people are just more inclined to bet on these more public teams. It's a little difficult sometimes to figure out where the truth really lies with them. I'm with you that I'm on the Red Sox tonight as well. Pivetta, he just walks too many guys. They're just in a good spot, decent hitters park, and they're not completely too expensive that you need to write them off. The other team like that to me is the Tigers. They're coming in with a decent run line as well. They face Alex Cobb. Miggy Cabrera, he's only 3,400 on DraftKings. I get that he's like not having a complete Miggy season here. He's striking out a little bit more. The walks are still very much there. It's mostly just like the ISO and the home runs for fly ball are down a little bit for him this season. So if you think that those things are going to kind of just normal out, like he's hitting, his ground ball rate is actually less than it has been in the past. The line drive rate is up. It's just the fly ball rate's down a little bit. That to me strikes as a batter profile that is just the home runs are going to turn back up, right? Like if he was like grounding out a ton, that's a number that kind of normalizes pretty quickly. Then you start to worry that there's an injury or there's something else going on with him. I just don't see that to being the case. And against Alex Cobb, just kind of a guy, not really, you know, no big strikeout numbers. Vegas likes the Tigers here for over five runs. The top of that lineup still coming pretty cheap. And it's really highlighted by Miggy in that DraftKings price, which I think is kind of a joke at 3,400. So Tigers, you mentioned the Red Sox, we mentioned the Rockies. Any other just kind of like one-off stack or just a guy or two that's maybe just showing up in some lineups that strikes you as a deal?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Cabrera. I think that's absolutely a good spot here. I'm not really seeing anyone else. Like, as I go through in the non-Red Sox, non-Rockies division, I will say that we are getting a decent amount of Cardinals showing up tonight. I think that is pretty logical. You know, Zach Davies is another guy who, just an eminent journeyman who's never really settled in on being anything special. Don't worry about his 7-3 record, please. He's basically just a below average pitcher. And he also has a lot of the same struggles that we like to target too, specifically in terms of giving up the long ball. Things are trending in the wrong direction for him this season, in spite of being just 24 years old, down to 6.5 Ks per nine, 3.4 walks per nine, 4.7 xFIP. Just a good spot. A lot of the Cardinals guys are affordably priced. So it's not like I'm targeting any big bashers necessarily for the Cardinals, but more just a steady stream of value guys. You know, Fowler, Diaz, maybe Molina if he's batting fifth again. So yeah, just another team of, I wouldn't necessarily call them high upside for big tournaments, but I wouldn't be surprised if we wind up sprinkling in a couple of those for our cash game purposes.
Yeah, and just like a couple other just like guys that I think will be popular. If you see Malik Smith still hitting lead or going back to lead off at 2,200 on FanDuel, I think he's like the low 3,000s on DraftKings. I'm not really suggesting play all the Rays here against Verlander necessarily, but that price is probably still too low. Eric Thames still probably in a pretty good spot. Not guys that I'm looking to just kind of stack the entire team for, but guys that they're just in good spots. Thames continues to kind of just absolutely crush the ball since coming over from Korea this year, so that doesn't look like it's going to slow down anytime soon. The price really hasn't gone totally nuts. All right, we're going to take off. We'll be back again tomorrow talking a full Friday in baseball. Buddy, stomach your way through the early slate and then enjoy the late slate of baseball tonight.
I will, man. And you.